and welcome. I am your host for the evening, Goblin Queen, and tonight I'm going to continue a series of videos I have that I call the Liminal Earth series because I read stories from this website that's called Liminal Earth, and what this is it's a place where people submit their firsthand paranormal encounters, whether it's ghosts or it's cryptids or time slips, but then also they tag the location of where their story took place. So it's kind of interesting because you can get regional information or hope to when going through the stories. And also if you're watching the video on YouTube, I put Google Street View of the location where it took place. So you can kind of drive along as we talk about the story. I say we because I have a guest with me tonight. I have Chris Woodyard with me. Hello, Chris.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. So, Chris Woodyard is an Ohio-based writer and a historian of death, badass, and supernatural folklore. She also has a marvelous podcast, which she co-hosts with Dr. Simon Young called Boggart and Banshee. You're also an author. You've written books on Victorian mourning customs, and you have an upcoming release that I'm really excited about, which is your contribution to the Exeter Companion to Changelings concerning fairy changing belief in North America, which we don't really get to hear about. So I'm really looking forward to that.
It's grim reading, I'm afraid.
Oh, yeah, as changelings always are. But finally, Chris, you are the author of the Haunted Ohio series of books on Ohio ghost lore, of which there are 9. Is that right?
Well, there's Haunted Ohio 1-5. And then there was Ghost Hunter's Guide to Haunted Ohio, which is now out of print, and Spooky Ohio, which is now out of print. And then Face in the Window and The Headless Horror. Those are the books I've written about Ohio ghost lore.
Wow. So I don't think most people, myself included, realize how haunted, whatever that means, Ohio is. It's a very unassuming state.
Well, I always say that where there's water and where there's Native American mounds, we find ghosts. There seems to be some correlation there. So, and we have a long, long history, lots of conflict, lots of disasters, all of which tend to create ghosts. So it's perhaps not as haunted as some states. I used to have a catalog where I sold different books from different regions of the country. And I, you know, would always count up how many books Ohio had versus, say, California. Mm-hmm. So, but we're up there. We've got the good numbers.
Wow. So obviously you're going to lend your expertise tonight regarding Ohio. All the stories we're going to read tonight take place from Ohio. So before we get started with the stories, I have a couple questions. Mm-hmm. So how did you come to find out that Ohio was so haunted or so rife with legends?
It runs in our family to sense and see ghosts. And I didn't find out about this until I was in college. I mean, I was noticing things and everybody's like, oh, you've just got a vivid imagination and you're a liar. So it was the 50s. Nothing was supernatural. It was all scientific-y. So I was at a family reunion and my cousin had just died. And my grandfather said something about my cousin walking into the room with his dead brother. And I looked at him and my mouth fell open and I'm like, you see them too? So, because no one in our family talked about it. And my cousins who lived closer to my grandfather heard all these stories. So my grandfather and his father and his father back in Switzerland, and they all knew about ghosts and could see ghosts and could tell when people were going to die. So I got that. And
wow.
I had written a book about a guidebook to Dayton when we first moved here. And the librarians were very, very helpful. And I asked them what book they wanted next. And they said, we need a good book of Ohio ghost stories. I'm like, I can do that. Piece of cake. And I thought, there's 88 counties. How hard can it be to find a story from every county? Well, it took me 10 years. There were actually dead zones where just couldn't find any stories or nobody would talk. So that's how it all got started.
Wow. So you are also an experiencer.
I guess you could call it that. I tend to just say I see ghosts, or I can see ghosts, or sense them.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's something I don't always talk about, and it's people look at you funny.
Well,
and perhaps they don't take your scholarship as seriously.
Yeah,
you say these things, but it does run in the family, and I can't help it.
Oh, thank you for sharing that with me.
Sure.
And yeah, I love when it runs in a family. That's so cool. Is it more on the male side of the family, or?
It is. It is entirely on the male side.
Wow.
And apparently I spoke to a priest who was from the same canton where we're from. And he's like, oh yeah, that's the most haunted canton in Switzerland. Like, great. Come by it honestly.
Wow. Wow. Very cool. So did you grow up in Ohio?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Been here most of my life.
Okay. Any stories or legends in particular that you grew up with?
Not really. I mean, I used to read fictional ghost stories, like Victorian ghost stories, because I was scared to death of all of this.
Yeah.
And I didn't really, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm seeing that thing, but everybody else is not seeing that thing. And that's awkward. But I spent a lot of my youth being very, very frightened because it's, And it's not even that you necessarily feel like you're being threatened by something. It's more, it doesn't belong here. And I always liken it to the dog that hears the whistle that we can't hear. And the dog is squirming and very uncomfortable because they're feeling this thing. And it's kind of like that sometimes. It's not always like that, but a good bit of it was until I figured out that this was just a family trait.
Yeah. Bummer it took so long to find that out. It would have been helpful to know.
Yeah.
When did your interest in death and the supernatural and folklore start? Can you trace it back to anything in particular?
I can trace it back till I was a very, very small child because I always loved cemeteries. Mm-hmm. I just loved walking around cemeteries and looking at the tombstones. And there was actually a pioneer cemetery out back of my elementary school. And I would jump over the fence and visit the cemetery during recess. Naturally, that made me very popular.
That's so cute.
And I did a presentation in sixth grade on a fashion show of shrouds.
Mm.
We were doing history, and I'm like, oh, let's do American funeral directing. So yeah, I come by it very, very long ago.
Very cool. Very relatable. Yeah, I have the same interests where it feels like I was just born with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask this question. I don't know if this is a question of contention or not. I tried to look it up and it seemed like it might be. What region of the U.S. is Ohio?
I call it the Midwest.
Okay. I always thought of it as the Midwest.
Yeah.
I came across a Reddit post, which, I mean, there's going to be Discord there anyway. And they're like, no, it's this. It says that.
What do they say it is? Did they say it's East?
I can't remember now. I'll have to dig it up.
Perhaps Mid-East. I don't know.
When you get into this mid, it's like, what are we even talking about?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm glad we are sisters in the Midwest.
Yes.
So first, we are going to start with a story from Columbus. I have no idea to this day what I saw. This happened the summer of 2021. So, I'm home alone, other than my disabled mother. My husband was at work. She is pretty much bedridden and cannot walk without assistance, and even then, not far. I woke up on a Saturday morning around 10 a.m. and decided to have coffee in my backyard. I have a hammock next to my garage, which is directly across from my back door. Which means I am in direct line of sight from my back door, approximately 30 feet away. I also have three dogs. So, I am sitting on my hammock, having coffee and scrolling on my phone. Dogs are running around the backyard. All is normal. About 20 minutes later, all three dogs run to the corner of the house and begin barking at the house. Odd. Then, they all three run into the house and immediately back out to me. No barking inside, even odder. So I look up towards the house, like, what is wrong with you guys? As I look up at the house, I clearly see a solid and physical person's white arm reach across the open space, grab the door by the edge, and swing it closed. Now, I immediately think my husband is home way early, and I think it's weird he didn't see me sitting there, and he didn't speak to me or the dogs. That would be very unusual in and of itself. So I get up right away and go inside to yell at my husband, but he is not there. No car in the driveway. Front door is still locked. I peek in on my mom. She is awake and confirms there's no one in the house that she could see or hear. I have called family and my husband to also confirm no one was here and ran away really quickly or whatever. I mean, the front door was locked, so no one could have just walked in anyway. I still had to ask. Again, to this day, I have no idea what or who closed my back door, but I saw their arm and just a hint of a body at the edge of the door, quite clearly with my own eyes, and now everyone thinks I'm crazy.
I have a couple notes about the story. Mm-hmm. I was having a hard time visualizing how they saw this arm. I guess the arm was closing the door from the inside. Could you get a sense of how they saw it?
Yeah, that's what it looked like. They said sort of a hint of body at the edge of the door.
Yeah.
So, you know, when somebody's sort of looking around a door or peeping around a door and or they've just got their arm hooked around it. Yeah, I could see that. You're not seeing the entire body, but you assume it's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unfortunately, they don't give too many details about the actual arm other than that it was white, which I guess they mean Caucasian, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. They do mention that it could have been their husband, so maybe it was a man's arm. I don't know. I would have liked more details about the arm, but possibly they don't have much more to give. It's like a split second thing.
Yeah, that's the trouble, is sometimes you just see something really quickly and it just flashes away and you're like, what did I just see? Or did I? And then you begin to doubt yourself.
Yeah, but it was enough for them to go and search the house and call every member of their family and everything. So.
Right, and find out who was there, yeah.
And the dogs seem to be alarmed as well.
Yes, and when you find animals alarmed, then I think it's a pretty good idea that there's something there.
Yeah, yeah. So I think everyone who's into paranormal research, maybe any research, has their certain subjects or themes that they have a particular fascination with or drawn to. One of mine is disembodied hands and arms. They're really common when you start looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
Personal experiences, that is.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this isn't technically all the way disembodied because there was maybe a little bit of a body, but I'm counting it.
Close enough. Close enough.
I'll take it. So I'm wondering, does Ohio have any tales of ghostly hands?
We do. We do.
Delightful.
These are the more, there's the conventional one where you see one. This was in the mid 1880s and it was a farmhouse near Plain City, and it had a reputation as being haunted anyway. And she woke near midnight and saw a man's hand and arm lying beside her face on the pillow.
Mm-hmm.
And she screamed, and of course they disappeared. And I love the way they phrased it. The balance of the man could not be found.
Interesting.
But so often you have the disembodied hands that are just felt and not seen.
Oh, good point.
A woman in Washington Courthouse was painting one of her rooms late one night, and she said, I was really tired, and suddenly it felt like a hand laid on my shoulder, and it was almost like somebody was saying, oh, God love you, you're working so hard. And it was very soothing to her. And then there was another woman who was restoring a historic house in Euclid. She said there were a couple of ghosts there, including a lady who smelt of lavender. She said, one day I was very frustrated and I was smashing my hands down on the keyboard at the computer in frustration, and I crashed it. And I was so upset, I burst into tears, and she felt a gentle hand clasping her shoulder as if to comfort her. And she said it was so real, she reached up to pat the hand. And she said, but there was nobody there.
Oh, nice, reassuring hands.
Yeah. Or then there was the man who lived in Massillon. He had a house that was built on a cholera cemetery.
Ooh.
Not the best idea, but people did that. And he was hurrying downstairs and he slipped. And he said, I felt a hand grab me by the upper arm and set me back up. And it was a very cold arm or cold hand. And the freaky thing was he could see the imprint of the hand on his arm.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a couple of other wonderful stories here. Let's see what we've got. This one is, I find, really creepy. This is from Champaign County. In 1892, a child of the family named Prentice had died. And as was usual, friends and relatives were sitting up with the corpse and some of them were dozing. But about midnight, one of the ladies jumped up from her chair and pointed to the wall. A hand of fire had suddenly appeared upon the wall, and it was up near the ceiling, and it pressed its finger against the papered wall and began moving slowly down towards the floor. And it went up and down 6 times. And they saw that these finger-width lines looked like they'd been seared with a red-hot iron.
Oh, my gosh. Like,
oh, my God. What was that about?
While they're sitting with a corpse?
While they're sitting with a corpse, yes.
Jeez. That's a different one.
Yes.
Whoa.
And then another, the last hand story I have is also to do with fire. Very dire story. This is Pike Lake Park. In the 1860s, a group of people were burning trees that they'd cut to clear the land. And this young woman was helping to turn the logs when a pile of burning logs shifted and rolled down onto her, leaving her hands trapped beneath them. And by the time they got the logs off, she was unconscious, and the doctor tried to save her by amputating the burned hands and forearms, but she died.
Mm.
So the doctor's assistant carried the amputated hands into the forest and dropped them into a hollow tree. And ever since then, anybody traveling through the forest at night reported being clutched at the throat or the knees by these invisible hands.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Wow. Man, you just took my hands into a whole nother ballgame with the felt hands. Man, I read something. I was flipping through this dictionary of superstitions I have the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading the entry for dead hand. Mm-hmm. And it said, I can't remember the year or if this was an American thing or English, but that at one point in time, hands of corpses were considered like useful. People would seek them out.
Oh, and yes. Medical. Yes.
So disgusting.
You rub one on a goiter and it takes it away. Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. All kinds of things could be done with a dead hand. You'd stroke whatever part of the body you had with this hand. And executioners were often asked to cut off a hand so you could have it and use it for your medical purposes.
Wow. So what year was that going on? Do you know?
I don't.
Okay.
I've seen this as early, I think, as the 17th century. It may be earlier.
Okay.
But I think at least in the 17th and beyond, certainly in the 19th century, it was still going on.
It said like they would be used for fertility too. I don't even want to know.
No, I hadn't heard about that particular part, but it's not improbable.
It's a dead hand help you with fertility. I don't really understand that.
I don't know. It's almost like you're trying to draw the life force from something dead, which seems counterproductive.
Right. Spooky. Awesome. So Ohio has no shortage of hands.
Nope. Show of hands.
Yeah.
And speaking of fiery hands, there was a wonderful apparition in Findlay, Ohio, where it was a giant hand seen in the sky.
Ooh.
And it looked like a flaming hand and it was dropping blood. Now, whether this was just something, you know, the local news guy made up on a slow news day and was trying to use as a warning to the depraved residents of Findlay, I don't know.
I love that, though. He got creative, if that's the case.
Yeah, it was.
All right, we'll move on to our next story, which took place in Delaware, Ohio. This story was submitted by Corvin, took place in 2018, and it's called Phantom Dogs.
My mother and I were driving home from a night out, trying to go down the side streets to avoid the rush hour traffic. It was dusk. The sun wasn't fully set, but it was still dark out. While driving past the cemetery, we heard six or so dogs barking and snarling, and thought nothing of it because the cemetery is right next to a neighborhood. However, I started looking around once the sound continued from directly behind us. Even when we weren't near any residences, it continued to get louder, as if they were gaining on us, like some kind of dog pack. My mom looked pale and asked me if I had heard them, to which I said I did. Suddenly, just as we turned onto Columbus Pike to get to our neighborhood, the barking and snarling suddenly stopped, as if someone hit a mute button. A couple of them were mid-bark when it went silent. The area around, which is usually filled with birdsong, squirrel chatter, or even just leaves rustling, was completely silent. It was extremely eerie, and whenever we go by that area, my mom occasionally brings up the phantom dogs.
The phantom dogs. So they never actually see the dogs. They just hear them.
And that's not always typical. I've got reports of actual sighted black dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just, I mean, they have to be pretty close to you.
Yeah.
If you think you're hearing them, you know, otherwise you just say, oh, I'm not seeing the dog that's actually there, a real dog.
Right. It's almost like they were kind of rushing up on them too. It kind of reminded me of The Wild Hunt or something.
Yeah, you're right.
Where it was spectral as well. And then the dogs go silent and they had this kind of Oz factor, eerie stillness afterward. Yeah. So I do think, before we get to the dogs, I do think the fact that this happened in front of a cemetery has significance.
Mm.
And the cemetery in question is Oak Grove Cemetery, which does have a couple of little legends surrounding it, right? Not dogs.
Right. There was a older gentleman ghost that seemed to help a little girl find her family. She wandered off from them and he took her back and then she looked around and he's gone. There's also a Revolutionary War soldier ghost because there's at least one Rev War soldier buried there.
Mm.
A lot of people came from the East Coast on land grants when they were when they'd been soldiers in the Revolutionary War.
So it has a little haunted history, but let's talk about some phantom dogs of Ohio. What can you tell us?
Well, when I think of cemetery dogs, the first thing I think of is church grims.
Right.
Which are, you know, the guardian spirits that either they're good or bad. You know, they can be nasty or they can be nice.
Sometimes depending on their color. White or black.
Right. Yeah. And I assume the belief arrived here with immigrants from England or Scandinavia. We've got a place in Richland County, Zeiters Cemetery, and it was haunted by at least one and maybe two ghostly black dogs. Now, it was alleged that a man had disappeared, maybe a peddler, and supposedly he had been killed by a local family and buried in an unmarked grave in the cemetery by the church. This story was never proven or disproven, but supposedly the ghost or ghosts appear in the form and color of black dogs. And nobody really understands why that would be, but that's exactly the story.
So it's the ghost of, well, it's perhaps the ghost of the men who are now seen as dogs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I like when that happens.
Yeah. Now, there's another cemetery ghost dog. This is in Dayton in Woodland Cemetery. And one of its most famous monuments is that of little Johnny Morehouse. He is said to have drowned in a Dayton canal and his dog tried unsuccessfully to save him. And the monument is a dog carved in stone standing over a sleeping child. Now, this is what's cool about it. The nostrils of the dog have been drilled out, and if you put your hand under its nose, it feels like it's breathing.
Ooh.
It's really a lovely, uncanny feeling.
Yeah.
Visitors are always leaving coins and flowers and toys on the monument. But in 1997, a man living near Woodland, he could overlook the cemetery, was just sitting on his porch, and he was startled to see a little boy 3 or 4 years old, dressed in old-fashioned knickers, accompanied by a dog walking between the graves. It wasn't dark yet, but the cemetery gates had been closed for the night, and he watched the child long enough to realize that there wasn't an adult with this child. So he immediately sent his grandson through the cemetery fence, squeezing through, to fetch the child. And he returned, confused. He couldn't find a trace of the little boy or his dog. So they called the police, who brought in a dog, a tracker dog, because they thought maybe there was really a lost child, but they never picked up a scent to follow. And I always wondered if the first place they should have looked was the base of Johnny Morehouse's statue. You know, would it have been empty?
Yeah.
the boy and his dog wandering around the cemetery.
Yeah, I love those stories of like statues wandering around.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know what kind of dog it was?
It's a very large dog, but I don't know. It looked like a Newfoundland or something like that.
Oh, okay.
But there's no actual documentation as to whether this really happened with the dog.
Okay.
The only stories I've seen have been a little snippets of obituary.
But it was a real child.
It was a real child. Yes. Gotcha. Yes. Let's see. Here's another cemetery black dog. We've got tons of them.
Yeah. So many cemeteries.
1897. A group of Quakers living near Lewistown, Ohio, were supposedly driven out of the state because there was a ghostly black dog haunting the Friends Cemetery. Now, this dog belonged to a fellow they called Uncle Jack, and he was a fish peddler and a fortune teller. When he was found dead in his bed, the black dog was also found dead at the foot of his bed. He was buried by the Quakers, but his dog was just thrown into a local reservoir. They didn't bury the dog.
Mm-hmm.
But a few years later, they were disturbed by the continual howling of a dog. And it was said that the dog was prowling among the graves in the Friends Cemetery. And you whistle or cry to the dog and it vanishes. So the Quakers said, we're done. We're leaving. This is too spooky for us, supposedly.
A fish peddler and a fortune teller.
Yeah, yeah. He must have been an interesting fellow.
Sounds like it.
And then you talked about white dogs.
Yeah.
There's a couple of white dogs that guard the very gothic Dexter Mausoleum in Spring Grove Cemetery. Wonderful, wonderful building. This is in Cincinnati.
Yeah, yeah. I looked at that. Oh my gosh.
And supposedly if you sit on the steps, they'll growl at you. They don't want you messing with the mausoleum.
Yeah, I did find that one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Two white, I don't know how many it's supposed to be. I saw it's two.
Yeah. It's these things vary with the legends.
Yeah, of course.
And of course, there's the Welsh white dogs that are portents of death.
Right.
And I can't pronounce them because I'm terrible pronouncing Welsh.
Yeah, like Anun something.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that cemetery is absolutely beautiful.
Oh, it's got so many wonderful monuments.
Yeah.
There's a place called Moscow. In Claremont County. It's on the Ohio River, and there's a historic building there known as Spate House. I'm not sure if it's still there. I may have heard that it burned down or something, but it was visited by a lot of notables, like the Marquis de Lafayette, and it was also the haunt of gamblers. So sometime in the late 1820s, I guess, one man brought his little dog and his card-sharping skills, and another man brought a pistol. When the first man got caught cheating, he got shot. So the guy who owned the house, knowing that this was bad for business, they took the man's body out, secretly buried it, and then they found that the dog was still under the table. And he started barking and howling, so they bundled him into a grain sack and threw him in the river. And since then, the house has been haunted, not only by the dog, but doors creak open and there's lights and you hear people moving around. But lots of people say they've heard the dog suddenly barking, and it moves. The barking comes down the stairs, through the front parlor, and out the front door, and over the cliff into the river.
Oh, no.
So I went there to visit, and I took a friend of mine, didn't tell her anything about the murder or the dog until we were on our way home. And she says, oh, like that little red dog sniffing around the retaining wall as we drove away.
Oh.
I'm like, what dog? There wasn't a dog there. Oh, come on. She says, it was right there by the wall. She says, it looked like a very close-cropped red-haired poodle. And she said it was an unusual color for a poodle. Oh, I hadn't mentioned the color of the dog at all.
Oh, it was a red dog.
But it was a red dog, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So that was very exciting.
Did you see the dog?
I did not.
Huh. Wow.
She got to see it.
Yeah.
So privileged.
Yeah. Poor thing.
So let's see. One more. A woman from Putnam County told me her father had told her this story and swore it was absolutely true. Now, that gives us pause, perhaps. Early 1900s, there was a wild young man, always drinking and gambling and swearing. And worse, he was always saying, God didn't exist and neither did the devil. For if he did, why didn't Satan come and get him? So, of course, this guy went to a dance and, as usual, he drank and swore, and it just repeated his challenge to the devil to come get him when this large black dog walks in. And it was seen waiting at the door. Its eyes were fixed on the young man, and its eyes glowed eerily. Well, shortly before the dance ended, the dog just trotted away, and the young man mounted his horse, rode along, and he was singing and swearing and calling to the devil to come join the party. The dog hurled himself out of the undergrowth, and the horse reared. He fell, slamming his head into a fence post and died instantly.
Whoa.
And the black dog didn't even stop to sniff the body. He just trotted off into the night and was never seen again. Coincidence?
She said this happened to her.
Her father told her the story. Now, whether it didn't happen to him, obviously, but but it was probably something he had heard from his father.
That's a good one. It almost sounds like something you would hear out of England or something.
Yeah, it's more of a classic folktale. I mean, you challenge the devil and something bad happens.
Yeah. The devil, you know, his form as a black dog is known mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just did my little internet rat research, poking around on the Shadowlands Haunted Places Index and found a few, which the Spring Grove Cemetery was on there. There was a dog with glowing red eyes in Dundas, Ohio. And there was one from Shelby, Ohio. And this person, it took me a minute to figure out which cemetery this was. I had to go look on a map because they called it Green Eyes Cemetery. I'm not sure why. But they said a huge dog is supposed to chase your car when driving past the cemetery. I don't know how huge. Okay, well, lots of doggies in a variety of, I mean, some of them are just totally like the ones in Spring Grove that just seem to just kind of be spectral
yeah.
dogs. Mm-hmm. Some mm-hmm. are ghost dogs. Mm-hmm. Some are the ghosts of humans.
Yeah.
a lot of variety.
Yes.
But a huge tie to cemeteries. There's no doubt about that. All right. So you want to move on to the next one?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. This next story takes place in Athens, was submitted by Keith M., and is called The Riches. The Riches is a former asylum and then sanitarium that is known for its paranormal activity. Investigations of the Riches and surrounding graveyards have yielded experiences of partially manifested spirits, strange lights, mediumistic contacts, and general high strangeness. Notable sites include the former tuberculosis unit, which is not open to the public. The building now houses offices for Ohio University, but the grounds are generally accessible. The Riches has long been a location for legend tripping for both locals and students at Ohio University. So, I have to mention that this was on the very first episode of Scariest Places on Earth. You remember that show?
I never saw it,
okay.
But I remember it.
Early, 2000 was when it started. Hosted by Linda Blair and narrated by Zelda Rubinstein from Poltergeist. Pretty amazing stuff. I loved that show. They did some episodes where they would go from place to place and talk about haunted places. They also did episodes where they chucked some family into a castle and strapped a camera to their face, and those weren't very good.
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
Those okay. were not very enjoyable. So I rewatched the segment they did last night.
Uh-huh.
And they start with this ridiculous card at the beginning. It says, according to
According to the British Society for Psychical Research.
Oh, dear God.
The 13th most haunted place on Earth is Athens, Ohio.
It's crazy. How do you figure that out?
You know, I've been looking from the beginning of my writing career here for the statement from that society, and I've never found it. And that's been pushed for years and years and years. And it's a spooky place. I can't say it's not. My grandfather had some kind of a ward who was in the Athens Lunatic Asylum. And so I would drive down there with him and my grandmother, and we'd sit in the car while he visited with his ward. And I never liked the vibe of the town.
Mm-hmm.
When I was older, I would drive down there on my motorcycle and spend the weekend, and, you know, we'd just hang out and just do stuff. But it always was extremely uncomfortable. And I always sort of apologize. It's like nothing personal. It's just there's some earth energies there.
Mm-hmm.
The spiritualists were big on a place called Mount Nebo, which was supposedly a site revered by the local Native Americans who held various rituals there. And of course, the legend of Athens is that there's cemeteries arranged in a pentangle.
Yeah, I heard that.
And then there's all kinds of horrible things happened. There's one cemetery that's supposed to be haunted by the Grim Reaper.
Mm.
And if you mess with any of the stones there, you know, the Grim Reaper will come and chase you away. So I got a phone call from this lovely lady, and she's like, I just thought you'd like to know that you wrote about the Grim Reaper in this one cemetery. That's actually my husband.
What?
She says he was an insect specialist. And he didn't like people desecrating this one cemetery. And he would be prowling around looking for insects. And he wore a sort of a hooded, caped jacket. And he had some sort of a device that he was using to cut grass or that looked like a scythe. And she said, I asked him if he had threatened people. And he kind of looks sheepish. And he's like, well, yeah, I might have told him to stop dropping beer cans.
My God.
Because the students would come and, you know, they'd drink beer and they'd, you know, do the Bloody Mary or whatever, you know, rituals people do when they're drunk in cemeteries.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. I thought that was such a treat.
So you mentioned the Athens Lunatic Asylum. Is that the Ridges, right?
That is now called the Ridges. You know, they were pretty blunt in the old days, and they didn't mince words. It was a place for lunatics, so that's what it was called. But as they tried to transition out of the old method of care for the mentally ill, they called it the Ridges.
Can you tell us a little bit about the history of it? Because the legends give it a very contentious history. I don't know how much is true.
It's difficult to say. There were just different ways of treating people, and sometimes you were treated well and sometimes you weren't. There were gardens, and the inmates kept the grounds nice because that was believed to be good for their mental health, to be out in the open air and doing things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there were actual documented problems with inmates being beaten or starved. It didn't strike me as it was that kind of a place. It seemed like they were actually trying to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the 60s, it was decided in the 70s, certainly, that they needed a more open way of dealing. Patients could sign out and go for visits, and they were just a little, they weren't as rigid about their rules. They were just trying to take care of people in a different, more compassionate way.
So next, we are going to talk about one of the stories associated with the Ridges. It's become a big part of its spooky history and legendary status, but it does concern an actual person who was a patient at the Ridges. And while that person is, of course, now deceased, Chris has always opted to leave her name out of her own books and writings on the subject out of respect for the living family members. So, while the story is quite well known, it's featured in the episode of Scariest Places on Earth, and it's all over the internet. I'm sure it's in plenty of books, etc. When discussing this segment, we have decided to leave her name and photo out.
I wrote about her and I did not put her name in the book because her family, I believe, is still in the area. And Lord knows they've had enough to deal with everyone telling this legend. So I prefer not to use her real name, but plenty of people have written it. But in 1979, this young woman patient signed herself out for an afternoon excursion and she didn't return. So they searched the grounds, the buildings, and they couldn't find her. I'm not clear on her medical history. Mm-hmm. Some said she could not speak. Other people said that her illness would just drive her to hide from those who were hunting for her. In any case, she seems to have gotten locked into a ward where she had taken cover. And this was an unused area. And about 6 weeks later, a maintenance man who smelled something found her decomposed body in a room that had already been searched. And her clothes were neatly folded by her body. When they removed her body, her portrait was found stained on the floor beneath. And the image can't be removed. Scrubbing only darkens it, and they tried acids, didn't burn away. And it's sometimes said that the young woman's ghost can be seen at the windows, pounding at the glass to make someone hear her.
Mm. So no idea how she got herself up there.
Nobody was clear on that at all. As I say, it was an unused area. They supposedly searched it, and perhaps they locked the door behind them, and then she had managed to hide herself well enough that she was locked in.
Yeah. Yeah. And good for you for trying to maintain some sort of honor for her memory, because it is a very sensationalized story.
It is. It's the story to do with Athens after the pentagram, of course. And
yeah,
most colleges have legends, but very few of them have an asylum on the premises to build legends around.
Yeah. Yeah. I love campus legends. I mean, I think it's an important part of American or any culture, but there's a special American flavor, I'm sure. And Ohio University has quite a few legends, it seems like.
They do, yes.
Yeah, I think I was also looking at Miami University. There was a couple from there, too.
Oh, yes. We have another disappearing person there, Ronald Tannen. He was in a band. He was in a fraternity. He was just a normal, regular guy. And his roommate came back and found his book open and his desk light on and his coat sitting there and his wallet and everything was still there. And he just disappeared. No one ever saw him again. And supposedly his ghost was heard flitting around the gardens of near the dorm where he lived. Lots and lots of rumors about whether he was seen 20 miles away, knocking on somebody's door, asking where he was, or that he'd seen something he shouldn't have, and he was murdered and buried in the basement. So it's very difficult to know what happened. His poor parents died without ever having any resolution, and they found a body in, I think, Arkansas that they did DNA on, but it proved not to be him.
Hmm. I mean, so campus legends, they're integral to the experience, it seems like, and they serve their purpose, I think, for, I don't know, just being that age and in that stage of life. So, I don't know, there's a difference between students passing these stories, telling these stories, going to these places on campus, and yeah, the sensationalism of a major TV show and
right, being exploited, basically. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure they serve their purpose for people on campus, and there's ones that are just totally fictional too. Like there was one that they brought up on the show about Ohio University, of a girl who was practicing black magic in her room, and
yes,
she committed suicide and the walls dripped blood.
Yes, and they walled up they bricked up the room and no one can ever stay in it again.
Yes, and there's a demonic face on the wood grain.
Yes.
Very, very classic campus legend. Our final story took place in Doylestown in 2018, was submitted by Lucy D, and it's called Doylestown Graveyard. I
used to live down the street from the graveyard, so I would walk around there often. One day, there was a beautiful sunset, and I walked to the graveyard to get a good view for pictures. I had my headphones in and was just dancing around when I saw a woman wearing an old white long dress. She was very see-through and almost looked as if she was hovering, but she was facing my way. I only got a glimpse of her because I was dancing. So I looked back around and she was gone. I went home right after that and everything was fine. I don't dream or remember my dreams very often, if ever. That night, I had a very odd dream about her, and I haven't seen her since.
So the cemetery in question in this story is Chestnut Hill Cemetery. I couldn't find anything about it.
Yeah, I couldn't either.
So could you give us a brief overview of what a white lady?
It's the woman in white.
Yes.
The device Frau. She was a harbinger of doom for European royal families like the Habsburgs and the Swedish royals. She was believed to be a wronged ancestress who would appear to announce an impending royal death. And it seemed like she traveled from kingdom to kingdom as needed. But in the United States, since we don't have royalty, the women in white tend to be sort of the archetypal ghosts, always wearing a white robe. They tend to be victims of murder or of accident. There's actually a place called White Lady Point on the Ohio River. This woman named Mary Fisk was found murdered. Her gown was white and it was all bloodied by the murderer who left a giant bloody handprint on the wall of her cabin. And after her killing, people on the river began to see her apparition, this fair-haired woman in white, arms outstretched, rising from the mist and floating above the water. For example, a couple of fishermen nearly tore the hull out of their boat as they were trying to escape. They say, "We saw her as plain as day. She came right towards us and we were going full throttle when we hit the bank." So it became to be known as the White Lady, and the river pilots called the place White Lady Point.
Mm.
And they would steer away from it because, of course, they didn't want to see that. Then in Tuscarawas County, 1881, a young woman named Mary Seneff was murdered, and her body was thrown into Sugar Creek. And a farmer saw this white form rise out of the water, and he said he saw her. It was her, the identical Mary Seneff, dressed in white. And with the other hand, with one hand, she pointed to a deep scar on her neck and an axe mark on her forehead because she'd been killed with an axe.
Mm.
And then the form moved backwards towards the creek and disappeared into the water.
Yeah, there's this water connection.
Yes, I have yet another one. I'm just thinking that. This was in Madison County, mid-1950s. This guy was driving home. A foggy autumn night, and this woman in white appeared in the road in front of him, waving her arms and crying, and, "I need help, please help me." And he's like, "What do you need? Help me, I need help," the woman kept repeating. "What's wrong?" But she never answered, and he realized the figure was transparent, and she was floating rather than walking, so he raced off home. And a few days later, his father heard from a sheriff's deputy that a woman who lived in a house near where the young man had stopped had disappeared. And her husband swore he knew nothing about her disappearance. And they eventually found her body wearing a white nightgown in a well right beside the house.
Mm-hmm.
Coroner said she'd been dead 6 or 7 days, and nobody was ever charged with a crime. They couldn't tell if it was an accident or foul play. But the young man was convinced that he'd encountered her spirit just seconds after it left the body at the bottom of the well.
Wow. Yeah, the well.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was just poking around again on the Shadowlands, there was a couple with, there was a creek in Fairfield where said to be haunted by a woman in a white dress and her young son who were thought to be murdered. Reno Beach in Toledo said to be haunted by a barefoot woman in a bright white evening dress waiting for her lover to return from sailing. So yeah, water and tragedy.
Yep. Definitely.
It seems like that's kind of a thing with all the, there's blue ladies and green ladies. And
mm-hmm.
Kind of they're just tragic spirits.
Right. And so often that's just how that's their identity. They're a white lady or a pink lady or a green lady. we don't know their names, and we only know sort of a vague story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of too bad that they've just been, you know, sort of pigeonholed into this ghostly category.
Yeah, wronged and then just left to wander without a name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They also seem, I mean, as is the case in the story, they seem to have a connection to cemeteries too.
Right. There was a panic caused in 1894. Miamisburg has a library with a park surrounding it, and it was built on a former cemetery. But when this was a cemetery in the 1890s, thousands of people came to see this young woman in white, and her hands were supposedly clasped behind her, and she was had her head down as if bent in deep thought. People brought guns. People brought clubs. They were shooting off guns. They were digging up graves to see if anybody was still buried there. It was almost like a vampire panic or something. And I've never heard, you know, what the result was. The authorities were not happy, you know, with this going on. Still, there were an awful lot of people who actually said they saw this thing.
Huh. Yeah, I also found a few more from cemeteries. Akron has Rose Hill Burial Park with a white lady. Then they also have Balls of Light and Strange Mists.
Ah.
A couple of good things going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh yeah, this other one's a cemetery and a river. This is in Warren, Ohio. Lover's Lane Memorial Cemetery, which is...
That's an odd thing to call a cemetery. Yeah.
Right. I wrote, the distraught wife of a slain Civil War officer haunts the cemetery after throwing herself in the river that flows behind.
Hmm.
She's seen wearing a white gown, haggard and drenched, and can be heard weeping.
Now, that's interesting that she's dressed in white. If she was bereaved, she would normally be wearing black.
Good point.
And of course, we've got, you know, the women in black all over the place as well. But it's interesting that these wronged or bereaved people are always dressed in white.
Yeah, that's a good observation.
You were talking about ghosts and the white ladies in the cemetery. There's one in Greene County near Treebine Road, near the cemetery at Byron. And this young bride was on her way to church to get married in some sort of horse and buggy. And she kept urging her father to drive faster because they were late. Oh, come on, let's get going. And they hit a rock and she was thrown out and killed. So she's buried in the cemetery at Byron. And people see her coming up to the road and saying, oh, come on, let's go. That's a pretty old story. And this one kid, 1914, he wrote about passing a country graveyard. And he doesn't say where. As I drew near the graveyard, my horse stopped and began to back in the road until the buggy was fast in the fence on the side of the road. She showed signs of great fear. I looked to see what had frightened her, and in the road ahead, I saw the form of a woman with long golden hair hanging over her shoulders and clad in a white robe. It came straight at me, and it said, "Oh, come on, come on." And then it arose with no effort about 3 or 4 feet from the ground and floated gracefully over the graveyard wall, and it beckoned for me with its hands for me to follow.
Oh, that's so spooky.
You can bet I did not obey the call, he says.
Good.
So I'm not sure if that's the same story. It said it was about 22 miles east of Dayton in Greene County, so very well may be the same ghost.
Mm.
Which brings us to ghostly brides.
Of course, wearing white, yeah.
Wearing white. And that's understandable. For example, in some Asian cultures, if someone dies before they're married, they're said to haunt because they're unfulfilled. You know, this thing that they were expecting to happen did not happen.
Mm-hmm.
And there is even a ritual of ghost marriages where you, if you have a dead son or daughter, you can have them married to another dead person so that they won't come back and haunt, which, you know, that posits that the only reason for living is to get married.
True.
If that's the culture, that's the culture.
Right.
But in any case, we have a wonderful story about a woman named Esther Hale of Columbiana County. She is one of Ohio's most notorious women in white. She was a jilted bride who died in 1837 of a broken heart, and she was found still wearing her wedding dress. It's said by the locals that you can still see her dressed in white, looking for her bridegroom on the bridge over Beaver Creek in Columbiana County. She waits there every year on August 12th, and she's this hideous figure in tattered white and lace. And if she touches you, she will become young and beautiful again, but you will die. So if you're driving in the area, roll your windows up. She'll lunge at your car and scrabble at your windows because she wants to touch and claim your living flesh for her own.
Oh my gosh, she is spooky. And she's on a bridge too, which is another prime haunting location.
Right. Another liminal place, yes. There's other stories about her that she supposedly was a Quakeress and she was a prophetess. And she supposedly haunts a mill in Beaver Creek Park in Columbiana County. I haven't delved too much into those legends, but it's interesting that she's got two origin stories, as it were.
Do you know of anyone who's actually said they've seen her?
I don't know. Again, this is one of those good folk tales and legend tripping place.
It definitely is. And as you're telling me these stories, it's making me think there was this book I really liked when I was a kid by R.L. Stein. And it wasn't Goosebumps, but it was like a short story collection he did. And it had these awesome illustrations called The Nightmare Hour.
Ooh.
Yeah. And one of them was actually about these kids who go to a cemetery for a school trip back when, you know, grave rubbing was a thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And they find this gravestone for a woman. And anyway, there ends up being like a ghostly or a skeletal woman in like a white dress. And yeah, she's reaching out and she wants to touch you and get her flesh back. So maybe he drew from such.
I wonder if he knew that story because he's from Ohio.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, wow. What a celebrity you have.
Yeah.
I love R.L. Stein. Is there anything else we have to say about women in white?
Sometimes they're omens of death, and that's kind of uncanny. This guy reported of a vision that he had had at age 7 in his family's Cincinnati home. He said it was a big, tall woman all dressed in white. She had a candle in her hand, and she looked so beautiful. I thought she was an angel. She stood there about 5 or 10 minutes. My father got up to see who she was, but she disappeared just as soon as he opened the door. And then my little sister was in the cradle at the time the ghost came to the window at 12 o'clock. She died the next day. So he believed that this was an angel or a ghost come to fetch the little sister.
Oh, they're a very gentle one, though. It's not like the banshee. Does she have a color associated with her?
Black and gray and red.
Mm. So cemeteries, water, and roads, too. I mean, roads are another very
Yes. And how much of that is just, you know, here's a mist drifting across the road and your headlight picks up an odd shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen ghost photos taken at night on misty roads and it's like, that's pretty obviously just mist, but it looks, you know, there's good deal of, it looks like something else.
Pareidolia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do love roadside legends though. There's just a good atmosphere with them.
Simon Young has brought up that people who are driving are almost more likely to have these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And is that because they're in sort of an almost dreamlike state or what?
Yeah, a light trance state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. It's a very interesting theory that I really like. What else was I going to say just now? Oh, I was going to ask about cemeteries. I mean, is there a reason beyond the obvious that cemeteries have so many spooky stories that obviously the dead are there and we're creeped out?
In my experience, I've really rarely encountered cemetery ghosts myself.
Mm-hmm.
And my theory is that, you know, people go where they live, not where they're buried. And yet there's loads of people that will, you know, spend time at their loved ones' graves talking to them because they feel they're there.
Yeah.
And that's a very comforting thought for some people. But in general, you know, we've gotten some good examples today of various ghosts in cemeteries. But as I say, in general, I don't find that it's the biggest category. People generally will go to a house where they used to live or possibly their death site.
I know the more you really think, growing up, you're like, oh, cemeteries, that's where the ghosts are. But the more you think about it.
Right. And hold your breath as you're going by and put your feet off the floor if you're driving by and all those little rituals that we think are going to keep us safe from being sucked down or taken over by the dead. And I think that's just sort of a human reaction. It's almost like one of those things that goes way, way back that we're primed to be afraid of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about, you know, the campus legends and things like that, and places people go for legend tripping and all that. And what I find that many of these places have in common is that they're nearly all made up or they're misunderstood. For example, there's a school bus in a woods near Bowling Green, Holcomb Road. And my God, you see legends all over the place. And according to the yarn, a man driving a bus full of school children lost control, went into a tree, driver was killed, bus burst into flames, killing all the children.
Yeah.
And of course, you'll see, you know, the driver's face appearing on the tree and the ghostly headlights and all this stuff. But there was no crash there ever, ever, ever. The guy who owned the property collected junk and he had a random school bus from the local high school. So this story has been built up and made up around this. Oh, what's that spooky thing sitting there for? It must have been in a crash. Oh, therefore, you know, and then they just keep building on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Now that I think about the ones that are around me, they're just made up.
Yeah.
They absolutely are.
Yeah. And it's kind of, to me, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
It's like, don't do this. This is muddying the waters. And I know there's people that have actually deliberately started rumors because they wanted to see how far it would go.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, don't do that.
Is that called lore?
Fake lore, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is just so frustrating to watch this stuff proliferate. And you correct people if you get asked, and it still sticks, you know, because it's more interesting. We've got Helltown in Ohio also. And, you know, supposedly it's the site of a satanic church and a cult and all this stuff. And it's like, no, that reversed cross is actually a motif in Carpenter Gothic architecture. So, and there's been plenty of people who've debunked that legend of Helltown, and they've done a really good job of it. So I applaud anybody that is trying to get at the truth on these things.
Yes, yeah, making your job harder, right?
Sort of. I mean, you know, we do our best. And you could say that none of this is true.
Yeah, right,
you
know, right.
No ghost story is true ever, ever.
Right.
But I've run into too many people that have experienced exactly the same kinds of things. And you have to think they're not all liars. They're not all crazy people. What actually is going on? And, you know, people will say, well, how do you prove the stories you write about? And I said, I don't. I don't make any. I mean, I've done genealogical research to prove that these people actually existed, for example, but none of the stories can actually be proved. And I will tell people, I said, well, or I could be completely nuts, you know, I'd be the last to know.
yeah and that's why I kind of do this format that I do. I like to pair someone's personal experience and then also try and find this regional material as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just because both exist and both are compelling in different ways. From the personal experiences, I mean, you know, I have my own, and so, you know, it's validating to read other people's, and it's entertaining too.
That's sort of the best I can say about some things is just, it's a cracking good yarn.
Yeah.
And we love hearing these stories. And I tell my husband that, you know, when the apocalypse comes, I'll have a seat by the fire because I can tell stories.
The storyteller. The best seat by the fire.
But I try to look at the history of things, and I try my best to try to validate or invalidate things to, you know, when you have somebody who says, yes, the wife fell down the stairs at Squire's Castle and she haunts there. Well, she died of natural causes in her bed 12 years later or whatever it was, you know. So I really prefer to have some kind of a balance there with the true story, but people are still going to say, you know, Squire's Castle is haunted.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. But with that, we've really just scratched the surface of Ohio's spookiness, which is incredible. I mean, I don't think many people have an idea that Athens, Ohio is indeed the 13th most haunted place in the United, and on Earth. I'm sorry.
Show me the citation.
I only have a screenshot. I'm sorry.
I know. Like I said, I've been looking for the footnote for years and there isn't one.
But so I'd love to have you back sometime, either to delve even deeper into Ohio's weirdness, but also there's a dozen other topics that I could pick your brain about.
Thanks. I would enjoy that.
Yeah, you have such incredible knowledge on so many different topics: folklore, superstition, history, fashion.
I call myself relentlessly informative.
Thank you for being so. And you're a biker and a ghost seer too, which we found out today. Cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
So yeah, I'm going to link all your links, books, podcast, website, everything good will be in the description, wherever you're watching or listening. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we close out, Chris?
Well, I just urge people to get acquainted with their local ghosts. We used to have a slogan in Ohio. It was Ohio, the heart of it all, but I call it Ohio, the haunt of it all.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for encouraging local folklore and preserving it. I think that's really, really important. And yeah, now hopefully people enjoy getting to see a little look around the very haunted state of Ohio. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
All right. I just want to give a thanks, of course, to Chris Woodyard again for doing this interview. I really admire her, so it was such an amazing opportunity to talk with her. And if you want to check out more videos in my Liminal Earth series, I will also link to the playlist on YouTube where you can watch all of those. They follow this exact format pretty much, except this is the first one that I've had a guest on. But it's reading stories from Liminal Earth, looking at the actual location where they took place, and discussing any regional folklore and history and spookiness that I can find. So thank you all so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed it. I will be back very soon with more stories. So until next time, take care and good night.